Why, hello there, Internet. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to No Free Rides. I am your host, Tiffany Carlson, and this disability podcast is brought to you by Easy Stand, the makers of the finest standing frames around. You can check them out at easystand.com. So today is January 30th, and this is our first show of 2013. It's crazy to think that we're living in the year 2013. First of all, I'm kind of superstitious, so the 13 kind of freaks me out that we're living in a year where there's a 13 in the number. And I can't believe I'm the age I am. I'm not telling you, and that it's 2013. It's crazy, but that's how life is. So as you can tell, though, I'm in a pretty good mood. Mainly it's because I just got some chocolate. I have a Snicker bars in one hand, and I'm really excited because tomorrow I have a wheelchair appointment for my new wheelchair, and I'm getting some stuff taken care of, and I'm so excited. And you have you had problems ordering medical equipment? And you know how problematic it can sometimes be, so don't get me started on it, but we'll talk about that later. But I'm so excited because our guest today, she's just a really great start to the year for our podcast, and having a wonderful guest like Jessica Cox on the show. And Jessica Cox, she was born without arms, and she is the world's first and only armless pilot, and she's a motivational speaker, and she's also the subject of a documentary that's in the works being made about her called Right Footed. So stay tuned for my amazing conversation with her in a moment. But first, you guys, as you can tell, my website, beautyability.com, if you haven't checked it out yet, if you're visiting this podcast on easystand.com, you might not know what I'm talking about, but if you're listening to this podcast via my website, beautyability.com, you can see that my website has a brand new fancy design, and you can thank a wonderful designer by the name of Sarah, maybe I shouldn't tell you her last name, but she's a paralyzed computer or website designer, and met her through the paralyzed community that we all kind of come upon once becoming injured. And she's designed my website for me. She's as fabulous, as you can tell, and I'm really excited about the site. So if you have any comments or suggestions, I'd love to hear it. And also, to you guys, something new that's been going on in my life since the last podcast. Have you noticed that Craigslist is charging for people to post job ads on Craigslist right now? So in the disability world, if you have to hire caregivers, for a lot of us, we go on Craigslist to find people. And I've been posting ads on Craigslist for years and for free. But all starting last November, I might have talked about this in my last podcast, and if I have, I apologize. But it bugs me that much. But now you have to pay $25 to post an ad for a caregiver. And a lot of us don't have a lot of money, you know, and having to pay money to find someone to work for you, sometimes it's just ridiculous. It is ridiculous. So I've had to deal with having to find a new PCA this month for one of my shifts. And it's kind of annoying to have to pay the money to post the ad. And then if you want to repost it, you have to, of course, pay another $25. And I don't think it's fair. I'm just going to say, I don't think Craigslist should be charging people to post specific ads for jobs. You know, I can see maybe charging people if they're posting, you know, job ads for marketing, but for caregiving ads, maybe they should give us a break. I don't know. That's my opinion. But anyways, yeah, you know, and it's funny because I do this show, you know, every month. There's always all the stuff that happens to me, and I usually take this opportunity to kind of complain about it on the podcast, but I got this new wheelchair, and it's not right, and I can't get my Easy Lock, which I use to drive my van, which is like a little lock that I use, and I put under my chair, and it locks into the floor. And for my new wheelchair, of course, there's a new lock that I have to get, and the old model that I currently have doesn't work. So it costs like a lot of money, so I have to save for it. So my brand new wheelchair is just sitting in my house in my bedroom, collecting dust, because I can't use it because I can't drive my van with it yet. So, and I have the seating for it, you know, specialized backrest and a seat and a butt rest, whatever you want to call it, and all that specialized for my body. and it's not right. So I'm really excited because tomorrow they're going to fix it. So there's nothing worse than a sore shoulder blade and butt. And you know how that is when you're sitting down all day. So it's kind of ridiculous. But getting a new wheelchair is sometimes not very fun. It's more stressful than it is exciting. It's definitely not like getting a new car. And another thing I want to talk about quick before I bring on Jessica Cox is I wrote a blog, and you'll find it on my website, and as a hyperlink to Spinalpedia.com. It's another website that I blog for, and I wrote a blog entry about Grant Corgan, who was paralyzed 2 years ago in a snowmobile accident. He was snowmobiling, did a jump, he missed the jump 70 feet, landed, still on the snowmobile, but broke, shattered his L1 vertebrae on impact, and has been paralyzed, but he's gotten a lot of function back in the last 2 years. He's able to now walk with canes, and he is a motivational speaker as well. And he says in his speeches that he, quote, doesn't believe in paralysis, and that he, you know, everything that you challenge yourself with is a state of mind, and if, you know, you only set your only limitations are the ones that you put on yourself, and, you know, it's all about being positive and looking at the glasses, always having at least 5% full. It's never empty completely. And he has a really obviously uber positive way of thinking, and it can be hard for people with disabilities who have acquired one through an accident. Sometimes you don't get as lucky as Grant, and you don't get that kind of functioning back, like, you know, for my situation and a lot of other people out there. And when someone like Grant says, you know, I don't believe in paralysis, you know, how does that make you feel? It kind of annoys me. I don't want to put his words down, but, you know, would you say I don't believe in paralysis? Would you say that looking at Brooke Ellison in the face, or Christopher Reeve if he was still alive, someone that can't breathe on their own? You know, paralysis is real. I drowned in the lake when I broke my neck because of paralysis. So, you know, it's interesting to me how people can take, you know, a positive way of thinking, and it's his dogma. He lives by it. So it's interesting to me. What are your thoughts on that? I would love to know. You can always write me and I'll post it on the site. But we have Jessica Cox joining us today, and she's also a motivational speaker. And in a way, she is just as positive as Grant, and I really enjoy talking to people like this because of their different ways of looking at being disabled and looking at their abilities and looking at themselves as just being different and not necessarily disabled, you know what I mean? So I love this kind of way of thinking about ourselves in a new kind of glorified way, I guess you could say it, and it's just wonderful. And so hold on one moment here, and we're going to bring Jessica on the show. Hey everybody, this is Tiffany Carlson, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have a really, really awesome person joining us today. I first heard about her, actually I saw her on Twitter about a month ago, and I didn't really look too much into it. I realized she had no arms and she was a pilot, and I didn't really click around, and I really should have, because I just got an email actually the other day from some people that are doing a documentary about her story, and Jessica Cox is, as I mentioned, she's the world's only licensed pilot without arms, and she's also, I believe, the world's only black belt holder in Taekwondo. She does a lot of stuff, and it's, you know, we all talk about, you know, pushing the limits despite our situations, and Jessica Cox definitely fits that perfectly. So without further ado, Jessica, hi, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel so stupid. I wish I should have known about you, I think. You're so big. You've met the Pope and the President.
Well, yeah, you know, I've been on some of the social networking things, and so that's probably the thing. I'm not as busy as I am on the... I don't get a chance to very often be on social media, so that may be one of the reasons that not too many people hear about me, but I'm pretty busy in my world as far as doing the speaking, doing motivational speaking and traveling the globe.
I know, your story is amazing, and you're doing motivational speaking now, and I know, but let's start from the beginning, and I mean, I know you were born with a congenital condition, right? You were born without arms, and they still don't know why, right?
That's correct, yes. There has been no reason. My mom was very curious when I was born as to what caused it, and they never came up with any kind of reason or solution for basically why it was. But I was born without arms.
Yeah. And that's a lot. That's the case with a lot of congenital, you know, I think, disabilities, like with kids that are born with maybe just a finger and a thumb, too. There's just a lot of strange conditions. And I know that with you, though, you went through, you know, a tough beginning of your childhood. I was doing some research on you tonight, and the beginning of your childhood was tough, but you discovered dance. And I saw you in some tap shoes, and that reminded me of my childhood. I used to love to tap dance before my spinal cord injury. And dance is a powerful thing. What did dance do for you?
Well, dance just created a platform for my speaking career. I didn't, you know, have this experience of being on stage until my first dance recital, and I was nervous. I didn't want to do it. I told my dance teacher and my mom that I didn't want to be any bit of part of it. But they somehow convinced me to go out there, and after that first dance recital, I just stayed on stage, got on stage every chance I got.
I love it.
And now have spoken to so many people from the stage, and it's great. It's turned into an occupation for me.
It's amazing. And you have shoulders but no arms, right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Okay. And so for people out there that maybe aren't familiar, haven't looked at any photos or videos of you, and just start clicking the play button, listening to the podcast. And it's fascinating, you know, seeing all the photos and videos of you doing everything with your feet. And I know that's just, you know, your normal everyday life, and that's all you know. And do you ever get sick of people going, oh my God, I can't believe you do blah, blah, blah with your feet? Or do you find it constantly something that you enjoy, changing perceptions?
I really enjoy the fact that just the mundane things that I do, and I even take for granted, of going throughout my day, mm-hmm. fueling up at the gas station by myself, and going to the grocery store, picking up things off the shelf with my feet. They truly do inspire people to believe that anything's possible if they can see me. So I think it's a blessing that just the simplest things that I can do, mm-hmm. that aren't, you know, grand or inspirational to me, but they really do inspire and give a lot of people hope, and it's a blessing to be able to do that.
I love that, and I love that, you know, you had some really great parents that, you know, I love how your dad said that he never shed a tear about your condition, and he just basically believed, you know, this is God's will, and, you know, and this is what your life is meant for, right?
Yes, he always says that he never saw me a victim, and so I didn't have that as an option, to see myself as a victim.
Beautiful.
And my mom was, you know, living proof that anything's possible. I looked at her as my role model, and she just constantly defied the odds, even now with her health challenges with cancer, she's
defying
the odds. So she's a wonderful role model to me, and the definition of perseverance and resilience.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your mom's having cancer.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, she's getting through it. She's stable now, so we're really appreciative of that.
All right. Well, every day is a blessing. I know how that is, so. And I know, too, I wanted to kind of go back to when you were dancing, and you stopped dancing at 14, and then you discovered kind of the world of taekwondo, and, you know, at that age, you know, it's a fragile age. How come you decided to drop dance and do taekwondo? What was the transition there for you?
Well, actually, I continued through dancing, but taekwondo was just an extra activity that I started at the age of 10, and just pursued it to 14, where I got my first black belt, and then rejoined in college, and then went for my second black belt.
Love it.
And so it was just a second activity, but I am still practicing taekwondo. That is something I'm active in.
Love it.
And tonight I should have been at taekwondo, but didn't make it to class. So it's something I continue to practice in.
I love the videos of you. You do the nunchucks with your feet, which, I mean, that nunchuck skills are awesome no matter if you do it with your feet or your hands. And have they had to modify certain moves for you from taekwondo? Did they invent any special moves for you, or are you just focus on stuff with the feet, or what did you end up doing there?
Well, all of the forms that require hand movements, punches and blocks, they substituted those with different kicks.
Okay,
so it was a substitution method and coming up with these creative kicks to replace the movements that I would, you know, not be able to perform.
Awesome. And in the beginning, I just am amazed, like, you know, okay, you're going to Taekwondo, and you have this mindset of, yeah, I can do it, I can't. You took I can't out of your vocabulary. And when you first started Taekwondo, though, was there any moment of, you know, I don't know if this is going to work for me?
You know, I don't think there ever was a moment of doubt.
I love it.
I was fortunate my parents were just the parents who didn't have doubt in me either, so that never rubbed off on me, and I just went forward and without a doubt that if I just kept at it long enough, I could succeed at this.
So cool. I mean, I think just that is so simple for you just to kind of be that way, but, you know, it's not easy for lots of people to kind of find that strength inside of themselves, you know? Do you find, other than having, you know, a family support that kind of made you be such the person you are, and I know that you're Catholic, and I'm sure your religion played a huge part, but do you have any other advice for people out there maybe that are struggling, and like, you know, how do I get to the point where I'm just going to be fearless, you know, and just kind of tackle these things that I you know, people tell me I can't do?
Well, it's definitely about a positive attitude and doing it. I mean, there's some days where it's really difficult because, I mean, I even struggle with it at times too.
Yeah.
But maintaining a positive attitude, mm-hmm. and for me, my faith has been a profound part of my strength. Mm-hmm. Given that, you know, I'm not going to be perfect, and I have my own flaws,
right.
challenges as well, emotionally and psychologically as well. So, but I think it's just about doing your best,
yep.
and getting through it, and just being positive to the best of your ability.
That's how it is. I have my good days and I have my bad days, and some days I just want to scream and not get out of bed, and I hate the world, but, you know, it's our lives is what we're given, and, you know, and you're just doing, I can't, you're surfing, you're scuba diving, and I believe, didn't you just go tandem parachute jumping with your husband?
Yeah, we'll be doing that on Saturday.
You're doing it this weekend, sorry, okay, I was looking at your Facebook, I'm like, oh my god, this girl does everything, that's so cool, but, you know, what the main thing, though, and that's what's getting you on Ellen and Inside Edition and all these awesome big name news, you know, programs, is the fact that, you know, you became the first and only armless pilot at age 25, and you were afraid to fly, weren't you, up until like a few years before you started getting into the world of flying?
Yes, it was a fear of mine to be in a commercial plane, and so the thought of being up there in a small plane was even worse, but I went up on my first flight, and I was hooked, I overcame it on that first flight, the fear, but it's still with you, and it's still good to have a little bit of fear, because it keeps you on your toes,
right.
and helps you be very aware of things, because I still have a little bit of that in me, and I, you know, I'm still scared a little when I go up and fly, but it's always good to have that fear in you, so that you kind of make sure that you're not too relaxed.
Well, how did you first get into flying? I mean, you decided, I love riding in a plane, and now I want to fly it myself?
Yes. Well, that first flight up in a small plane, because I've been in many commercial flights on many of those, but being mm-hmm. up in a small plane wasn't something I'd ever experienced. So
yeah.
I went up for the first time with a nonprofit called Right Flight, and they took me up and helped, and I got to experience a flight lesson. And so I was really hooked. I was just like, well, this is pretty neat. It's different to be behind the control,
yeah.
and see exactly how this plane is flying versus being a passenger and being very passive. So it's a different, you know, to be in control versus to be a passenger is a different experience.
Oh, yeah.
And so that probably was what helped me get over that fear a little bit.
And you do not use any special adaptations, do you?
No, I actually fly just a standard aircoop airplane. There are no special modifications on it. It's not a plane built for me. It's
mm-hmm.
just a standard airplane.
And so can you kind of describe how you fly the plane, like the left and the right foot, and what you do exactly?
I keep my right foot on the yoke, and I use it just like you would on a car.
Mm-hmm.
I would just keep my, you know, with driving, I use my right foot on the wheel.
Right.
So I put my right foot on the yoke of the airplane, my left foot on the throttle, and I'll take my right foot off once in a while to push on the radio controls or any of those other instruments, the altimeter and all those types of things.
It's so cool.
But using both feet like that and, switching off, keeping my left knee once in a while holding on the yoke to keep it, to keep a limb on it at all times, that frees up my right foot so I can do other controls or type in radio frequencies or things of that sort.
Wow, that's amazing. Was it difficult to learn?
It was really a challenge. For anyone, flying is a very difficult obstacle to become a safe pilot. It's really, you're doing a lot. You're multitasking and doing all that was on top of that, having that little bit of fear was very much a challenge. But overcoming it and getting that pilot certification, there's nothing like having that feeling of accomplishment.
Oh my God! So now you can go and fly whenever you feel the itch, right?
That's correct. Yes, I have a certification that allows me to do that.
So do you have your own plane?
No, I don't own an airplane. I actually rent I rent it all throughout my flight training. So
okay.
One of these days, though, who knows?
Yeah, one day, my dad wants me to get his pilot's license, too. He loves single-engine airplanes, and he always talks about, one day, Tiffany, there's going to be flying cars. Do you think that's going to happen in our lifetime?
I don't know. You never know, though.
It's tough to say. Flying is really magical, though, and it's kind of an addiction. And you've been to the Oshkosh Flying Festival in Wisconsin, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
It's amazing. I'm in Minnesota, and it's just a huge festival, and it just looks like just a blast. And have you ever met anyone else out there, or even in your other pilot, journey of other disabled pilots? Are you like anyone with anyone near your situation, or are you pretty much the only one out there?
Oh no, there are a few, and I've met, I can probably say 10 to 15 people who were born without arms, and one of them in particular that is going to be, actually there's a number of them featured in the future documentary we're working on.
Yeah.
And one of them in particular was a mentor for me when I was a teenager, and she came into my life at a time when I had a lot of questions about whether I'd be able to have a family, whether I'd be able to take care of a baby and get married and all these things. And she comes into my life, and she pretty much answers all those questions, because she shows me how she changes her baby's diaper with her feet. She carries him by picking him up with her shoulder and chin. And this is in a way
that's
that doesn't
huge.
The baby in any way.
Uh-huh.
Cause it's something he was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really, that type of mentorship is what I'm giving back to other girls born without arms.
That's so cool.
What the documentary is all about.
I love that. How old were you when you met this woman?
Well, I think I was about 18 or 19.
Yeah, that's such a really important age, too, to meet someone like that. To see that, I can do that too, right?
Yes, it was definitely life-changing.
And that's what it is. I met a woman who was a paraplegic who had a family and was basically doing all the stuff that I wasn't sure if I could do it either. And it really transformed my life too. I believe having some kind of woman, a mentor, when you have a disability is massively important. And I know you've been traveling around the world doing this, and you've been doing it. How long have you been doing this, reaching out to young women in similar situations as yours?
I've been doing it ever since, I think it was freshman year of college.
Wow.
And it's so rewarding to do it, though. It's one of my greatest passions. And I just do that because I love to do it. And it's one of the things that I talk about in the documentary is how I'd love to give back and be that same mentor that my mentor was for me.
Well, what organization do you do this through? I mean, how do you find girls without arms in other countries?
Well, there's an organization called the International Child Amputee Network.
Okay.
And surprisingly, there are, I think, at least 5 to 10 children without arms. And so I've met them through that organization.
It's very rare, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Very rare.
It is.
Wow, that's crazy to be one of a few dozen in the whole world. I couldn't imagine. I would feel very special too. But when you meet these girls, what's their disposition, and how has it changed? How does it change after you meet with them? Can you see a difference?
Well, you know, I think before I meet with them, they have a lot of questions in the same way I did before mm-hmm. I met my mentor. And it's just a question of, you know, well, what kind of future is in store for me?
Right, right.
And then I meet them, and it kind of just, it really answers all their questions.
I love it.
One meeting. Like, that they have nothing else to, they don't have to worry about anything, because it's, they're going to be fine.
I love it. And I saw this wonderful, this beautiful video, I don't know, it was from some news network, and you got married, I know, last May, and there was a few girls at your wedding that you met through your speaking and that you invited to your wedding, and they were there, and oh my gosh, they were the cutest things ever. And one of the younger of the three girls was talking about how she's like, now I know how I can get married too, and how I'm going to cut the cake, and how I'm going to throw the bouquet. And I was like, that is what your life is meant for, is just that exact thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it just a beautiful, I mean, what is that, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's, I mean, beyond words to know that it's made it someone's life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Know that they're going to be okay.
To give them hope,
yeah.
To give somebody hope, I think, is one of the most beautiful things you can do. And, it's just, it's so exciting to meet about you. You know, this documentary, right, is called Right Footed, right?
That's correct, Right Footed.
And does that mean that you can be right or left footed when you have only feet?
Yes, I believe so. And depending on, you know, if the soccer ball was coming at you, which foot would you like to kick with?
Yeah.
Probably determine if you're right or left footed.
So are you right footed?
I am very much right foot dominant. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So how did you end up meeting the director, Nick, what's his last name?
Nicholas Sparks.
Nicholas Sparks. Now, it's pretty exciting to get to be asked someone, I want to make a documentary about your life. And when did this start happening? Was it the last year?
It has been about a year and a half, or a little less than a year and a half now. And he met, I met him through the circle of pilot friends.
Okay.
And he was made a documentary about another famous aviator.
Yeah, I saw that.
Roger Barnes. Uh-huh. And so I said, he asked if, well, we kind of just, I was interested in doing it, and he was interested in it all at the same time. And so right now we're just in a position where we want to finish it, because we've done a lot of hours and hours of footage, like the wedding and everything.
Okay.
But we're in a position where we want to continue it and finish it once we have the support, the financial support to continue it.
Right. And that's the important thing. And I know that you guys are going to be doing a Kickstarter campaign starting here up in February, which is always helpful for so many artistic projects. People are using Kickstarter, and it does definitely help, but you need the attention for it. And, you know, I was also looking at your documentary's Facebook page, and they seem to be having you do a lot of crazy stuff. Like, did they put you on a snowboard recently?
Well, unfortunately, the snow melted. We were supposed to do that, but the snow out here in Arizona is very, I guess you could say, you can't really rely on it as you can in the East Coast.
Yeah.
So we don't get very much snow, but we do have a little bit up in the mountains, which are higher altitude than the cities.
That's so cool.
You can go up to the mountains and go skiing, but that's only when there is snow, and right now I think the snow melted, so.
Oh, so bummer. I bet you'd be pretty good at snowboarding.
I tried it. It was a blast. I tried it for a little bit, and after getting used to that fact that your feet feel like they're just
stuck
on that board.
I know, they're like fused together, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember that's how it used to feel, too. So, you used to use prosthetic arms back when you were young, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you gave them up in eighth grade. And have you ever thought about maybe I should give those a try again? Or,
no? Well, no. I actually find that my feet work better than any form of prosthetics that I've received throughout childhood.
Right.
And I mean, that doesn't say that prosthetics are not great, because they're wonderful. They've been providing, they've been provided to these veterans coming back, and they're able to restore the functions of, and for people who've lost limbs, for them to just regain the ability to have their life back and their, and do things again. That is incredible. But for me, this is all I've ever known from birth, so I'm in a different category in the sense that my feet are more adapt than someone who's lost limbs due to trauma.
Do you look at yourself as someone with a disability, or do you not, out of curiosity?
I'm sorry?
Do you look at yourself as someone with a disability or not really?
I honestly don't see the disability aspect, but I mean, I do see myself as being different.
Right.
Different would probably be the better way to
see it,
because of the fact, that if this is all I've ever known and nothing has, no function in my life has been taken away from trauma or something that has happened. So it's different. It's completely different than having something and then also losing it.
Right. And that's different, you know, but a lot of people in the, you know, disability world or whatever you want to call it, you know, have their acquired, they're born with their disabilities, and there's always like this, you know, conversation of what's better, not knowing what I'm missing out on or having had experienced it at least, you know, and I think people can kind of go back and forth on that all day long. And I think, you know, in your situation, though, I mean, what are you going to say, you know? But I do believe, though, that what you've been able to do, obviously, is it's insane. I mean, what have your parents said about all the stuff you've accomplished in your life?
Oh, I think my parents have refused to even question what I'm going to do next, because it's I've just taken off at this point, and they just listen and hear the story, so they never know what I'm going to get into next.
Could we talk a little bit about dating, maybe, and how you met your husband?
Yeah, please do. That'd be great.
Because, you know, we talk a little bit about dating on this podcast series once in a while. And, you know, the hiccups that can come along, you know, if you have something that makes you not completely 100% like everybody else out there, you know, and how that can affect, you know, your self-esteem maybe when you're first figuring it out. And, you know, as a teenager, did you date at all? Or what was it like for you as a teen and in college?
Well, I can't say that I was as confident as I am now throughout those teen years, and those are really tough just for anyone, but when you're different, it makes it extra difficult to get through those years. I remember it being really rough. I was very shy and withdrawn, and so for me, you know, I really didn't date much throughout my teen years, and once I was in college, it started to blossom. And when you're in college, it's good to be different. It's good to stand out.
Absolutely.
And to be very independent and not necessarily blend in with the rest of the crowd like it is in high school and junior high.
Yep.
So it allowed me the opportunity to become more confident in who I am and expressive of who I am and not feel embarrassed or shy about it. So I was able to kind of come out of my shyness throughout those college years.
I love that.
And that helped.
What was your first date like then?
Well, you know, I can actually think of a date that I had. I was set up on a blind date in college through my roommate. Mm. And apparently my roommate set this up, and I was up for it. I was like, you know, well, what the heck? Just try it out, you know?
You never know. You just never know, yeah.
You never know, and then I was pretty gutsy. I knew that he was going to be absolutely shocked upon first sight of me to realize, oh, wow, she doesn't have any arms, you know, and you know, that could have turned into a bad situation.
Yeah.
I don't know, but a lot of times people tell me is that they first meet me, and if they're absolutely shocked. They don't know what to say. First of all, they don't even know how to greet me, because they think you're supposed to shake hands.
Yeah.
So they don't know how to greet me, and it's all very awkward. But then minutes later, once I open my mouth and we start conversation, they just forget. They forget the fact that I don't have arms.
Love it.
And I carry myself in a way that it's not like I'm obviously feeling like a victim or like someone who's not complete.
Right.
So when I start talking and I share more of my personality, they start to forget. And I think that's what happened during this blind date, is that we hit it off, and he forgot that I didn't have arms.
Yep.
He wanted to continue on with another date. I didn't necessarily want to. So, but it shows that he was able to see past my disability.
Yeah.
Because I was confident enough to not feel embarrassed about it or to feel shy about it, and I was able to open up myself. And the instant that I made myself comfortable with him, and more importantly, comfortable with me,
mm-hmm.
was the instant that he could feel comfortable around me and comfortable with himself and the awkwardness of the situation.
And that is so important for that to happen. I mean, you hear that all the time. If you feel comfortable about who you are, people are going to sense that, and it's going to make the whole energy around both of you, like, completely, like, relax, right?
True.
I love that. I love that. So then you dated, and then you finally. How did you meet your husband?
Well, Patrick was he was at a Taekwondo school.
Oh.
I still practice Taekwondo, and I was going into a Taekwondo school.
Okay.
He was a fourth degree black belt, and at the time I was a first degree, getting ready to be a second degree black belt, and I went in to do some training at a school and found out that he was one of the co-instructors.
Oh.
He's a friend who I had trained with years earlier, and I was going to her for some special classes so that she could help me prepare for world championships.
So cool.
So I got to reconnect with her, and mm-hmm. in reconnecting with her, I met Patrick.
Okay.
And he was in a position where he's an instructor, and so you're not really allowed to date your students.
Okay.
Even though I am a year older than him. But because of that position, nothing happened for about a month or two.
Right.
And he had the opportunity to transfer to a new Taekwondo school, a new job in a different city. And once that transition happened, he asked me out.
Oh my gosh. That's so romantic. So how long did you guys date before he proposed?
I think we were together for maybe 8 or 9 months.
Whoa, that's...
It was short, and we just knew it was the right time to move forward on the relationship.
Gosh, I am so jealous of you. I've been with my boyfriend for 2.5 years. That is so romantic, though. 8 to 9 months, and he proposed. How did he propose to you?
Well, first of all, he had the challenge of figuring out what engagement ring.
Oh, right, the engagement ring.
So he had to think about it for a while. He knew that I didn't like toe rings.
Okay.
I don't like toe rings because when I wear my shoes or heels or something that's so it makes it very uncomfortable to have any kind of jewelry on.
I believe that, yeah.
So he knew that, and I guess some conversation he asked me, and he remembered that. So he came up with a new method, and he gave me an engagement anklet.
I love it. What's it made out of?
Well, the engagement anklet was, I think it was white. It was white gold.
Ugh.
Or something like that. And it had a heart with diamonds on it. It was beautiful. And then the wedding anklet has white gold and gold on it.
You wouldn't put a diamond on it? Hang it off the side or something? No.
Mm. Well, so the engagement did have a couple diamonds on the heart.
Yeah.
But the wedding one is just the band, because I noticed that I needed a really sturdy one, so we went to pick this one out together.
Yeah.
Because the anklet kept breaking off if I was, like, in Taekwondo or something.
Oh, my God, that would freak me out, yeah.
So we had to find something very sturdy, and this gold and white gold anklet worked as a wedding one, because it hasn't broken since the wedding, and it's been about 8 months, so that shows that it was good and sturdy, and that was the most important thing.
Oh, and so then, did he just, like, when he proposed to you, did he wrap it around you? Were you totally surprised that he had an anklet? Like, oh my God, how romantic, really.
I was actually in such shock that the anklet aspect didn't really...
Okay.
I mean, it was one of those moments where I was...
I'm getting proposed to, yeah.
So, but I thought it was so sweet.
Oh, I love it.
You know, they love hearts, and the fact that the anklet had a heart with diamonds on it was just perfect.
That's gorgeous. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that you don't like toe rings, you know, because I imagine you have some very particular things. And I was in the documentary, there was a little blurb on the site talking about how, you know, pedicures are super important in your life because, you know, you're using your feet for everything. And how often do you get your pedicures done? And, you know, I mean, foot care, I mean, this is like girly stuff, but what products do you like and that kind of thing?
Well, I do love pedicures. I think I had one 2 weeks ago, and my toes are already needing one. So I am already signing. I called up to make to make actually an appointment to have another pedicure tomorrow.
Okay, every 2 weeks.
Pedicures don't last very long because I'm constantly washing my feet.
Oh my gosh.
The polish wears off very easily.
Yeah.
And they get dried out. So keeping them very moisturized. And if I do need my feet to look nice, I just have to get a pedicure. If I need to get through it and I don't have time to go get a pedicure, I'll have to do them myself.
Oh my gosh. So how do you do, you can do it yourself using your one foot and then painting your other toe?
Exactly, yeah.
That's awesome, by the way. That's crazy awesome. So also too, you got some LASIK done on your eyes, which I think is really awesome because you were putting in contacts in, which I also looked pretty cool that, you know, you could do that, and then you were able to get some LASIK. I mean, was that, did you kind of miss putting it in contacts because you got so good at it? I mean, you know what I mean?
No, I actually don't miss contacts or glasses.
No, okay.
It's just nice to have the ability to wake up in the morning and have one less thing to do.
And you do makeup amazingly well, too, which is when it comes to makeup, it's like too hard? Is there anything that's too tricky that you don't even bother with?
Well, one of the things that is somewhat difficult is eyeliner.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people, when they put on eyeliner, they hold one eye shut or something.
Yeah.
That liner on with the other hand.
Yeah.
So for me to actually have one foot up to hold an eye shut,
I know.
The other foot holding an eyeliner, you know, pen, it's just pencil, it makes it very difficult. So sometimes I just go with mascara and pass on the eyeliner.
Well, you know, I with the way my arms are, I can't hold my one arm to hold my eye, so I can only use one arm to do my eyeliner. And CoverGirl pen, their pen eyeliner, you don't need to hold your skin back. You can just take your foot and you could probably hold it up right to your eye and it would draw right on real easy. You should try.
Great. I'm going to have to go and get one.
Yeah, you should try it because I swear by them, and I, you know, with my limited mobility, it's like the one eyeliner that I found works. It's the eyeliner from CoverGirl. It's just their simple pen one, and it's not the pencil. It's like the pen. You twist it and it comes up. It's the best. You should try it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, totally. So gosh, I know have you turned 30 yet, or it's happening this weekend, right?
Yes, it's happening Saturday. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about turning 30?
Well, I think that's why we're doing the skydive. It'll be the first time Patrick and I have ever done a skydive, and what better time to do it than on my 30th? So we're going to, I guess, have a big 30th birthday thing, dive and have dinner, and it should be, I'm looking forward to it.
So you don't feel freaking out that you're getting older?
Oh, no.
No. I love it. I wish I had that mindset. When I turned 30, oh, girl, it was scary. Are you going to be doing any special speeches around your birthday or coming up here?
Well, I'm all over the place. You never know when. I mean, for the next 4 months, I'll be in four different countries, the Philippines, Mexico, Korea, and Ethiopia.
It's amazing.
So, there's going to be a lot of speaking in the next 4 months.
And let's talk about that Ethiopia thing, because that's really exciting, and that's kind of newer, right? And you've been asked to go over there to help disabled children be integrated into the public school system, right?
Yes, the Handicapped International we've teamed up with them, and they are setting up a trip to Ethiopia where I can go and speak to a number of different students and their families, children with disabilities, and travel throughout Ethiopia, just bringing that hope and the message that it's all about opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because even someone without arms can fly an airplane.
Yep.
She was given the opportunity, and that can be the same for anyone with a disability in Ethiopia.
Yes.
A lot of times they aren't given any opportunity.
I know.
Because of I guess just a lot of the past and what they used to think
about
people with disabilities, unfortunately. So I think that me being there is going to hopefully open up the eyes of many and change some attitudes.
It's so great that you're doing that. And that is really the best way, I think, to change perceptions is for someone like yourself to go over there. And, man, that's going to be a really wonderful privilege to be able to travel over there. And how did they contact you and go, hey, we want you? Is that how it worked out?
Well, we wanted to include this in the documentary, this very important trip. So we contacted Handicap International to see if we can do this for the documentary. And so right now we're at the fundraising state where once we've raised the funds to cover the entire trip through the, it's actually somewhat like the Kickstarter campaign. It's actually called Indiegogo.
Okay, okay.
And it's very similar to Kickstarter, like you mentioned earlier. But it's Indiegogo, and we're going to launch that on February 11th, starting to raise the funds to make it possible to go to Ethiopia and meet up with the Handicap International people there so that we can facilitate this trip and have a huge impact and bring the film crew with us.
Oh, man, I hope you guys can get those funds. It'd be so, so important if you to do that. I mean, you've traveled over around the world before, and how was that funded?
Well, that would be typically through sponsors or corporations that would hire me to come out.
Oh, okay. That's
but
great.
For this type of event, which is to help with the children with disabilities, there isn't one sponsor for that type of need.
Isn't that just sad when the most important thing, that's when you have to raise money for it, you know? Try to get out there. Well, when you were in other countries and companies hired you to speak, where did you end up, like in Greece, where did you speak at? I'm just curious, like what's like the average, you speak at churches and where else is exactly?
Anywhere and everywhere, but for the international gigs, they usually come through corporations.
Okay.
And corporations want their employees and their staff to be motivated to succeed in the workplace. So they bring together these conventions, these events where they come and do seminars and workshops and train their employees and staff, and at the same time they want to have them they want inspiration, motivation to be a part of that as well, so that it kind of inspires them on a personal level to succeed. And so they bring someone in like myself to come in and speak to all of them. It's not related to anything that they're learning throughout the seminars, but it's more of the inspirational aspect. And so I come in and do my best at sharing my story in hopes of motivating and inspiring them.
Oh, man. That must feel just, like, so awesome to kind of experience that different cultures and to have, imagine, I would really enjoy the after speaking and having people come up and just being able to speak to people. And what kind of moments have you had interacting with people at these events?
Well, one of the incredible moments in the middle of Ghana, Africa, was when I got to meet this woman by the name of Louisa, and she came up to me after I was speaking in the capital of Accra, Ghana. I was speaking to all of, in a big auditorium, and she heard about me through the media that we'd done to promote the event, and she came all the way from her little village to the big city of Accra to come hear me speak. And the thing about Louisa is she was also born without arms. She was older than me, and she told me her story about when she was born and how difficult it was. Even, you know, it was just even difficult to survive being born with a disability. And so she was talking about her hardships that she experienced and her family experienced for having the disability that she had. And it really did make me feel grateful for being born in the United States, for one.
Yeah.
And also grateful that we got to connect and share a couple experiences and kind of relate to each other.
That's beautiful. Right? Wow. I mean, that's just kind of stuff where I believe that it's meant to happen. Don't you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just beautiful. I bet. Do you ever go to sleep where your heart's just like filled with just so many good experiences, it's hard to fall asleep?
Yes, it's true.
I kind of have that. Whenever I interact with people, other people with disabilities, where I just feel like, man, this is my purpose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. So the goal, we're going to kind of wrap things up here. So let's kind of let people know where they can find information about this documentary and how to help support it.
Well, we actually have a link off the website, rightfooted.com.
Okay.
And we also have the Indiegogo campaign. It's not up and running yet because it's not going to launch until February 11th.
Okay.
And so if anyone would like to go and see, just come to my website and stay tuned, and we'll have a direct link off the website, rightfooted.com.
Okay.
And we'll have a link to the campaign. And otherwise, if you're if you want to check it out on February 11th, go to Indiegogo and you can find it there.
That's awesome. And for people out there, the documentary is just going to be about 2 hours of just showing your life, basically, and everything that you've been able to achieve.
Yes, actually, it will be an hour long.
An hour long. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Well, and then the ultimate goal is maybe to see if it can get on the film, like the movie festival circuits, maybe possibly at one point.
Yes, that's the hope.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I hope it happens. You know, I was so, you were on Ellen last December, right?
Yeah. Oh, actually, that was December 2008.
Oh, my gosh. You need to get back on some TV, girl.
That'd be neat.
I know. I would love to see you, like, on Anderson Cooper or something like that. That really needs to happen for you.
That was about to happen, but it ended up being canceled the last minute.
Are you kidding me? I totally called that. I could totally see you on that show, too. Oh, man, he needs to change his mind and have you back on there.
I hope so, yeah. Oh,
that's a bummer. That's a bummer. Well, you know, it's been an ultimate pleasure to speak with you and to have the honor of just getting to know you briefly here on this podcast. You're just, it's amazing to meet anybody that pushes the limits as toughly as you have. So bravo to you, Jessica. And I really, really hope that your documentary gets made in the way that it deserves to be. So.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the podcast and good luck with all your other podcasts.
I know, we're gonna be shooting out some good ones this year, and this is a good one to start out the year with. So I don't know how we can top you, but we'll try. So,
okay.
All right, thanks, Jessica. Have a wonderful night. Okay.
You too.
All right, okay. Bye.